Hello, friends, and welcome to episode number 272 of Bad Flips and Maple Dips. I now realize, Justin, that we're saying this is episode 272, but if Shohei Ohtani signs with Toronto, it's not going to be episode 272. It's probably not even going to be 282.
It'll be like funny? This intro never happened because I'll edit it out.
Well, I'm Patrick. He's Justin. This is our intro. I want to live in this world. But welcome to the pod. If you like what we do at BFMD Podcast, just Google Bad Flips and Maple Dips. You'll find us. Thanks for all the love we've gotten over the year on Spotify. That was pretty amazing to read some of the stats.
Yeah.
And all of that. Today we're grading infielders. We've got seven of them, one of which I don't think really had a lot of time on the infield. But where else are you going to put the DH? So, without further ado, this is going to be a spicy episode, so buckle up. We're starting Fast and Furious, Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Yeah.
Justin,
You look at his Savant page, you see the red, and you're probably like, A plus immediately. And then you look at what actually happened and you're like, how did this happen? This guy hit 264 but had an expected batting average of 295. How does that happen? His expected batting average, Patrick, was top 4% of players in the league, 96th percentile. And yet he hit 264, 30 points lower than what was expected of him. Went from hitting 32 home runs last year to down to 26 after hitting, obviously, 48 in 2021. And was, again, healthy for the full season. Played in 682 plate appearances. And only had a 789 OPS. And if people remember from our time listening into the outfield episode, I've got beef with Rogers Center. Let's look at Vladdy's road numbers, Patrick. 346 plate appearances, 858 OPS, 289 batting average. That's kind of what you'd expect if you looked at a Savant page. You look at Vladdy at home, a 238 batting average and the 715 OPS. His slugging percentage is 100 points lower at home. His batting average is 50 points lower at home. His on base is exactly 40 points lower at home. There's something going on. I don't think I've got my tinfoil hat on anymore. I think the data is starting to tell the truth and agree with me that whatever they're doing at the Rogers Center, it's got to be the baseballs, because you can't tell me that over a full season of road games, Vladdy's home and away splits should be so drastic when he's only got 10 more plate appearances on the road compared to at home. But he hit 6 more home runs on the road. He struck out less on the road. It's just, there's something happening out there. Same amount of doubles home and a road, but I mean, that's, doubles are a little bit less, because I mean, you can get a double on a ground ball in the outfield versus a laser beam off the wall. There's many ways to do it. There's only one way to hit home runs, and that's out of the ballpark. And he just didn't do that as much at home as he did on the road. And yeah, I just really struggle. I mean, Vladdy was pretty consistent over the season. I mean, he had a really good April. He had an 879 OPS, and then a really good September with an 814. Everything else was between 713 and 785 throughout. So it's not like he had huge peaks and valleys. It was definitely bookended by two strong months. But there's still something going on at home. And I mean, the spray chart still doesn't lie. He hits the ball for power everywhere, which is great. The underlying like whiff percentage actually got better. His chase and whiff got better this year. He struck out less. He walked more than he did in 2022. So Vladdy was really, he should have been better at the plate than he was, but he wasn't for some reason. So I mean, if I'm grading him based on numbers on Savant, he's getting an A+. But I'm grading him based on real performance, and I think the best that I can do for Vladdy this year is probably a B-, based on real numbers and based on expectation. We expected him to, I mean, 26 home runs is still terrific, but we expected a bit more from him, especially the way his numbers did like bounce back on those the seat, like the eye metrics. He just hit the ball better than he did in 2022, but he had worse results. The fielding and the base running also dropped, so I'm grading him on that as well. The critical error in the playoffs on the bases. B minus. I'm going to stop right there before I keep talking myself deeper and going lower. B minus.
I don't think my grade... This is weird because I was critical of Letty the entire year, and my grade is not going to be as low as yours. That's how I'm going to lead off this. That being said, the home runs have dipped every year over the last 3 years. The average has dipped dramatically over the last 3 years. The OBP has dipped dramatically over the last 3 years. The slug has evaporated from his runner-up MVP season. 789 OPS. That's quite a bit lower than what you would expect out of Vladdy. This is the worst possible year to negotiate an extension for Vladdy. There's no chance that he and his people would even want to go to the table. Not a chance. I mean, publicly, I think he's said things like, I haven't heard anything, and that he only cares about baseball, which is, like, he's saying all the right things. But, like, now is the time for the team to offer him a big, long contract to lock him in. But, boy, what a disappointing season for Vladdy himself. There's no way that he could look at this and say that he would be happy.
I mean, he's been in the gym already. So is everybody.
Absolutely he is. The thing that made my heart sink last year was it was late in the season. He did an interview with Hazel talking about how he was trying to hit more line drives. And my heart sank. Because that means that there was a fundamental change in his approach at the plate. And it's yielded worse results twice in a row.
Chick stayed the long ball.
Is there a way to look at his launch angle? Is it better this year or worse? No, it's worse. It's better.
It's actually better. See, that's what I'm saying is everything that you look at with his numbers say he should have had a better season than he did, but it was the home numbers that freaking killed him. He was awful at home. Awful.
What was the BABIP?
I mean, if I'm looking at Fangraphs, BABIP 277 versus 289 the year before and 313 before that. So I don't know if it has BABIP. I'm going to try and find you BABIP home and away. Give me a second.
Well, while you're doing that, let's talk about the way that he hit balls this year. A majority of the pitches that he saw were four-seamers, and he only hit 250 off of them. That's a pretty big drop-off from the 385 in his MVP season.
I wonder if we have splits season. On pitch types too. That'd be fun.
And that's what I'm doing right now. And a 305 on four seamers in 2022, 2023, 50-point drop off to 250, dramatic.
Yeah, they don't have splits for like home and away for pitch types though, do they? That would be fun to know.
No, they don't.
By the way, BABIP was 260 at home, 293 on the road. So
Jesus.
There you go.
Yes. 30 points. That's why.
Yeah, and but, I mean, WRC plus at home, 99, 137 on the road. There's something going on.
He struggled a lot with the slider this year. Sinker, I'm okay with those numbers. Change up, that's not really very good. That's a tough pitch to hit, though. A cutter, he clobbered. Curveball, he did okay. Sweeper, he... and then the splitter, which he did not see a lot, he crushed it when he did see it. So, and he saw one forkball this year. That was fun. So the main issue that I'm seeing here is that he's not creaming either the fastball or the slider anymore. So something is happening with those two pitches. I don't know.
Can I hypothesize the fastball?
Yep.
Trying not to pull the ball as much.
Yeah, but Jesus, this is so stupid. You have a guy who has more raw talent at the plate than we've ever had in this uniform, and you're telling him to try to hit line drives more. Why? He should be uppercutting 45 to 50 home runs a season. It's bad coaching.
Yep. I agree.
Get that man up to the plate and let him swing at whatever the hell he wants to swing at. Within reason.
Within reason. I mean, he did a good job of that this year. Like, his metrics look great. The results at home, not good.
In the organization told him to hit more line drives, and that was in his brain all year, and this is what we got.
Yeah, but to be fair, Patrick, if he had done the exact same numbers home and road, he would have had the exact same numbers, if not better, than 2022, right? The fact that he was an 858 OPS at home, he was only an 819 over 2022. And I mean, I'm just going to pull his 22 splits up as well. Yeah, he was actually better at home in 2022 by almost 50 OPS points than he was on the road. So, I mean, there's something about Rogers Centre this year that hitters just didn't like.
I'm not willing to let the coaching staff off the hook.
Yep. Oh, I agree with you.
So I reject this hypothesis, and I'm just going to go right back to where I was a minute ago, which is the coaching.
Yep.
It fucked the team up. It fucked Vladdy up. Vladdy is a generational hitter. He should be in the same conversation as Juan Soto, not like a step behind Yandy Diaz. You know what I mean? And that's not disrespect Yandy Diaz. Yandy Diaz is the best first baseman in baseball right now, period. I don't want to have a conversation about
Freddie
that.
Freddie Freeman would like to talk to you.
I've got some bad news about Father Time for you. Because it's about to catch up to our boy, who we love on this podcast, but
that might be your hottest take ever. That
no, it's not.
That Yandy Diaz is the best first baseman in baseball. That's a pretty.
You don't
spicy.
Think Yandy Diaz is the best first baseman in baseball?
I do not. We don't have time for this tangent. We don't.
I want you to go look at Yandy Diaz's Savant page and then tell me.
I'm gonna look at all first basemen. And I would say Freddie Freeman and Matt Olson are both well above Yandy Diaz.
All right, let's move on. I am giving
Bryce Harper is a better first baseman than Yandy Diaz.
Yes, he is. That's true. End of conversation. I'm giving Vladimir Guerrero Jr. a B, because despite the awful coaching that he was given this year, he was able to muscle out an all-star level season.
Yeah.
Will he be better next year? Undoubtedly. Undoubtedly. Let's move on. Bo Bichette. This is another one that's going to be tough. And I bet we have two different grades once again. Maybe not too far off. I'll just say right off the top, I love Vladdy. I love Bo. If we end up signing Ohtani and trade for Juan Soto, these guys are not getting extensions. I don't think it's going to happen. Bo Bichette, though, had a good season. His batting average up to .306. He's a career 300 hitter.
Yeah,
that's great hitter. Who he is. OBP online with career average. The slug down a tick this year. For an OPS of .814, the stolen bases, we thought the stolen bases were going to shoot up because of the changes.
I think the injuries slowed those down.
They sure did. The home runs were way down this year, too. And I think that there's a bit of a contributor. Now, My only knock on Bo Bichette in any capacity is the fact that he chases way too much. And I understand that's the type of hitter that he is. He's aggressive. But if this man learned how to take walks, his OPS would be like 1,000.
And not everybody can have 1,000 OPS.
No, but Bo has so much raw talent, and people talking about how Bo's getting traded and everything, like, the only way that Bo gets traded is if we get a player equal to or better than Bo back.
Yeah.
Plus. And then they're not going to do that. No one's going to make the trade, and there's no team for him to go to right now, so...
Do you think... So... If the Jays do get Ohtani and Soto, this conversation is going to be redundant if that happens in the next 2 weeks. You think there's no chance Bo or Vladdy gets extended?
Where's the money coming from?
Rogers, buddy. They could have a $500 million payroll and still be making billions every year.
Yeah, but do they want to spend that much money on the baseball team? That's the question. That's really the $64,000 question. With Bo... I would think out of all the players on this team right now that are under the age of like 30, he's the only guy I think who is like a lock to be offered a serious extension for like mega money, like big bucks, mega dollars. He's still a $25 million a year player, I think. And
he's a shortstop too. Yeah.
Yeah. The defense did improve actually quite a bit this year. Is it world breaking? No.
No, but it's.
Is bad. Tony Fernandez still the reigning best shortstop in team history for so far? But Vladdy is just so good at the plate. I don't even know what else to say. I'm giving him just a straight A for the year. I love everything that he does. There are things I wish he did better. I wish he was more patient. I wish he didn't chase as much. But then he wouldn't be Bo Bichette. So I don't know.
I'm an A as well. And guess what the difference between his home and road OPS was, Patrick? How many? Guess a range.
Zero.
92 lower at home than on the road. There's something to it. I'm telling you. I'm not crazy, right. People.
Isn't it crazy, though? Like, think about, like, when Bo Bichette debuted.
Yeah.
And we were so hyped.
I'm still hyped.
It's five years later. Bo has 89 career home runs, a .299 average, and a career OPS of .827.
Terrific player. All-star. Perennial all-star.
Is there anything that he does that frustrates you?
He gets into those classic Bo and two counts a lot by swinging at a lot of pitches, but again, that's who he is. The fact that he's still able to hit 300, even though he swings at too much, is a testament to his overall skill. So
he can't hit the slider. That is maybe the only criticism. Look at all the pitches that he faced this year.
Yeah.
He crucified all of them except for, I guess, the splitter and the sweeper, but he didn't see very many of those. But the slider, 421 pitches, just a .240.
Yeah, that's because it's going down and away. He likes to swing at those.
Yep.
But yeah, I've got no problems with Bo. I'm giving him a straight A as well. Matt Chapman.
Oh God.
This guy, Patrick, he hit his career average .240. He was 1 point above his career average on base. He was below the slug, though. And I'm back here with my typical home road splits. He was 52 points lower at home OPS than he was on the road. So. There's something.
Can I say a couple things about Chapman?
Yes.
Okay. There's maybe two players in baseball who swing harder and hit the ball harder than Matt Chapman. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe Bryce Harper and Juan Soto. That might be it. There's your list.
And Ohtani, perhaps.
Maybe Ohtani. Unfortunately,
the quality of content.
And there's maybe like five or six players who don't chase us, who don't chase as well as Chapman, as mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. doesn't chase. That being said, good Lord.
Yeah, this Savant page, it doesn't make a lot of sense. like you say, based on the hard hit contact, you'd expect this guy and like the average exit velocity being 98th percentile, you'd expect his expected batting average to be a lot higher than 230, but it wasn't. And I mean, he has a 56.4% hard hit rate, top 1% in the league. Like he is the 100th percentile, but he doesn't hit it on the sweet spot enough. I don't know. I have a hard time describing Matt Chapman's Savant page to people, because you would look at it and you'd see all these red numbers and you'd be like, hey, this guy must be one of the best hitters in the league. And
he must be a bopper.
And you would tell them he was for 1 month. I mean, I guess you could say he was good in July too for OPS. But I mean, for April, he hit 15 doubles in April. Like, who does that? Unreal. But he only had 11 after the All-Star break and hit 205 after the All-Star break, including finishing the season hitting 167 in September and 197 in August, with OPSs below 633, because it was 632 in the last month of the season and 532 in August. The power just went away. The batting average went away. He was still getting on base, like at a reasonable difference from his batting average, but the batting average was 167. So something just, the law of averages had to bring him back to his career numbers. That's what they do over the course of 600 plate appearances, is they bring you back to where you should be unless you've fundamentally made a change. And Matt Chapman did not fundamentally make any changes. We thought he had in April. We were ready to sign this guy long term, and then the rest of the season happened. He went from having like almost zero pop-ups early on to having 11.3% again and getting under a lot of balls. Actually got under more balls this year than he did typically. And yeah, he still had a lot of hard hits, but boy, oh boy, did he fall off a cliff after that first month of the year. And again, struggled to hit fastballs, which has been his problem this year and last year. So, boy, oh boy, Patrick, I don't know what to tell you about this guy. If we're grading him on April, it's an S tier grade. Like, he's the answer forever. He's the best player in baseball. But we grade him on the full season, and it's a C minus for me. C minus for the fall off.
The fall off was miserable.
Terrific defense still, but
look at his, this is crazy, but if you look at his expected home runs by ballpark, this man needs to sign in Cincinnati, like,
well, I mean,
right,
everybody
now
does, and they hit a lot of home runs every year at Great American Ballpark. But yeah, you're right. It is a big difference.
It's 35. Dramatic. Here's the thing with Matt Chapman. Weird metrics, okay? He can't hit the slider at all.
Yeah.
Holy shit. He hit 176 on 438 sliders.
Yep.
He hit even the fastball, that should be the pitch that he mashes.
Yep.
Hard. And he hit 224 on 880.
The only pitch he mashes is the changeup. That's the only one.
Well, he hits 323 on the sinker, which is devastating.
I mean,
586 slug, that's enough to write. You write home about that.
Yeah.
So, guys who throw sinkers or change-ups, check under their bed at night for Matt Chapman. But the thing is, like, and then if you look at his spray chart, a lot of balls bouncing off the wall. A lot of balls will be bouncing off the wall at Rogers Center. Or safely caught on the warning track.
Yeah, he. I believe there was a stat at one point. I think he was among league leaders in fly ball outs of like 400 feet plus, because he just hits the ball to the wrong spots. which is probably why that Great American Ballpark stat is so high with 35 expected home runs. So
accurate.
Yeah.
But yeah, looking at his season, like if you were to just show me that those numbers at the end of the year, I'd be like, the home runs are way down, but not really that bad.
Yeah.
Great fielder. Great fielder. But is he worth $20 million? No.
Yeah, I would say no. What's your grade for him?
For nearly 600 plate appearances, he only gave us 17 home runs and a .240 average. Sure, he's got good plate vision. Sure, nobody hits the ball harder, really, than Matt Chapman. Maybe a couple guys that we mentioned before. But his May, June, July, August, September, it was miserable. If it wasn't for his April, he would have been either traded or DFA'd.
Yeah. Sorry if you can hear jingling on the mic. My dog is right next to me demanding.
What do you
pets.
Think would have happened? Let's say hypothetically Matt Chapman has a similar April to the rest of his months. How far season would he have gone before he was either traded or designated for assignment, or the Jays made a trade for another third baseman?
It would have been hard to justify keeping him around, that's for sure. But
one of the issues the team had, though, was their depth chart at third base wasn't really as strong.
Yeah, it was Espinal and Cavan.
Neither one of those can combine do what Chapman does. Yeah, maybe Biggio has a similar slash line, but actually, when we went over the numbers, Biggio's seasonal numbers, they would have been better. He would have had more home runs.
Mm-hmm.
With like a very slightly lower batting average.
Yeah, it's tough to say if that would have actually happened, but you're not wrong. Yeah,
it's hypothetical. Well, I know we're dealing
it's
in hypotheticals.
Yeah.
For me, Matt Chapman, this was a year for him to be like to show the league that he was still one of the premier third basemen, and now he still remains
defensively.
Probably,
he is, yes.
Defensively, he is. Unfortunately. He is the top third baseman free agent in a very shallow pool. The Jays are stuck where they could either bring him back and they're going to have to overpay, or they have to roll the dice.
Yeah.
With what they got.
Yeah, which is
or
risky.
Maybe they make a trade. And that's the thing is, I don't know what you do. You're stuck. You're really. It's a terrible spot.
Let me pose this question to you.
Okay.
Matt Chapman re-signs with the team and gives you his career averages over the course of a full season without peaks and valleys. Are you happy with that?
No.
Why not? What's wrong with the 790 OPS?
Because the only time the Jays are able to win playoff series in their franchise history is when they have a good third baseman. Who can
what's not good about a 790 OPS and 20 plus home runs?
That's not really fair because he's not a 790 OPS player.
That's his career average.
That's his career average. Okay, but tell me about his last three seasons.
I know. I see it too, but I'm just asking you. Like, that's what him and his agent are going to be pitching people. This is what I've done over my career. Teams are going to ask, yeah, what have you done for me lately?
No, fuck all that. Because this is what I'm saying, Justin.
Yeah.
When this team was winning playoff series in 2015 and 2016, did we have an elite third baseman who could match?
Had an MVP.
That's how you win playoff games.
Yeah, I mean, nobody on this team matched this year, though. That was the problem.
Do you think this man can do what JD did?
No. But the Jays also didn't have Lottie and Bo and then either, you know, like there are different ways to win. I don't disagree with you that they need a better third baseman. I'm just saying if you could re-sign Matt Chapman for not a ludicrous amount of money for say 4 years, I would do it. If he's can be just consistent, if I know what I'm getting, if I know I'm getting Matt Chapman who did what he did this season but averages it out over the course of a full year instead of peaking in 2 months and being brutal in the rest, I'm happy with it. I just need consistency. I can't have a guy hitting a 530 OPS in my lineup down the stretch. I need him to be 700 plus in every month to make him worth everyday playing time.
I don't want an all or nothing player.
Yeah. I think you're going to have a hard time finding not that in today's baseball. Three true outcomes, pretty much.
What's your budget for Matt Chapman? Extension or re-signing?
I don't want to give him more than 4 years. I'll give him the Ryu deal, four by 20, so four years, 80 million. I'll give him that, and if it is what it is.
He would walk.
Sure, that's fine. If he doesn't want to sign it for that, he can go sign somewhere else, and they can overpay him. So.
Okay, but now the Jays are stuck in a situation. Who's the third baseman next year? We just talked about how Davis Schneider is not the guy.
Well, if you don't want to re-sign Matt Chapman, then who is?
It's a platoon of Santiago Espinal and Kevin Biggio.
That's worse than Matt
Chapman. Let me ask you a question. Given Santiago Espinal...
I don't want Espinal on this team next year. I think he's...
I understand that, but just listen bad. To the question. Do you think that they could recreate what Matt Chapman does in the aggregate with what they have...
No.
...in the system?
No, I don't. Not what he does on both sides of the ball. The defense is going to be impossible to recreate unless you're trading for like Nolan Arenado or something. But I don't see it. I think I know Matt Chapman was awful the last half of the year. Like, no denying that.
Half?
He had a good June, I think, didn't he? Like, he had a good April and a good June. There were 2 months he was good. Like, you look at his pre and post All-Star numbers. I mean, in July he hit .247 with a .908 OPS. Like, that's still pretty good. Nothing wrong with that.
You know, the Jays, they have been, they're shopping for a third baseman.
Yeah, as they should be.
Every Some names have been coming up other than Chapman, Isaiah Kiner Falafel, which I would not want. But if you look at this third baseman market, there's nobody. What are you going to do? Sign Evan Longoria for 1 year deal?
Fuck no.
Justin Turner?
No. And Justin Turner played mostly first base for the Red Sox too.
Segura?
No. Like, that's the problem, is it's so weak.
Giovanni Ursula?
Yeah, God, no.
Okay, so the name that's been shopped around a lot or brought up a lot is Jaimer Candelario.
Jaimer, yeah.
Or Jaimer?
Yeah.
Is it Jaimer or Jaimer?
It's Jaimer.
Jaimer. I apologize.
Yeah, no worries. It's one of those names where it could be either way.
I would take this guy, Candelario.
Really?
Better home run hitter.
I just
better average.
The teams he played for and the parks he played in. I don't want to touch that one with a 10-foot pole.
What's wrong with Detroit?
What's wrong with Detroit? It's a cavern. There's nothing there.
I mean, he hit .633 in 2022.
Yeah, he was awful with Detroit.
.633 OPS. Negative war.
He's coming off of one good year.
He had two good years. 2021, he had a fantastic year.
Sure. But if you're using the Matt Chapman argument, what has he done for me lately? Vladdy also had a great 2021, and he hasn't been that same guy since. So, and yeah, I mean, Candelario, .807 OPS last year. It's not.
I'm saying
it's
he might be
special.
Cheaper than Chapman.
Probably will be.
Look,
they're the exact same age. Candelario is a switch hitter, which, I mean, he wasn't a terrific left. He wasn't very good. It wasn't a very good switch hitter. He's definitely better versus lefties.
The thing is that the Jays are going to need to try to save money.
Yeah.
as far as if they're going to sign Otani.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah. If it's a big if, and I think that's, and then we've talked about this before, is like a lot of these free agents have not signed yet, the bigger ones, because they're waiting for us to see what Shohei does.
Put it this way, if Shohei Ohtani signs in Toronto, they're not going to re-sign Matt Chapman. They're going to take
no chance.
They're going to take the L at third base and hire, or like, they're going to promote from within, which is going to suck because the team is built to have a third baseman with an elite glove.
They need it with the starting pitching stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so the team is going to suffer from a pitching perspective, but they're also going to have Shohei Ohtani, who is the only player in the last 100 years who can be elite on both sides.
He won't be elite on both sides and for this the coming season, though.
No, he won't. You got to take a knee in the first year, yeah. But after that, you're stacked.
Yeah.
Maybe
you are.
Your trade chip, maybe Alek Manoah is your trade chip to get a third baseman. Or maybe you trade for Nolan. Would you trade for Nolan Arenado?
No. Not at this point.
No. Let's move on. Danny Jansen. Danny Jansen is easily top five favorite players for me.
Love Danny Jansen. Huge Danny Jansen guy.
Huge Danny Jansen fans here. Technically, he doesn't qualify for Savant metrics, but there's stuff we can talk about. I love the fact that he's embracing his role as a Deadpool hitter.
Oh, yeah.
The average was not as good as it was last year. From 260 down to 228. The home runs were up.
Hits dingers.
The man hits ding-dongs. The OBP was down a little bit this year, and the slug was down. So the OPS went from 855, which was elite, to 786, which is still well above average for a replacement-level player. As our second catcher, I guess you could say, this is a guy I want locked up.
Long apparently, the Jays will not be extending him this winter, is what the rumor on the street is.
What do you mean?
They're going to wait. They're going to play out this season and see what happens.
Because he has 1 year left?
He is going to be a free agent after this coming season.
That makes me extremely sad. But the thing is, he's a guy, given how much Alejandro Kirk struggled this year, he's a guy you cannot afford to let walk, especially after you traded Gabriel Moreno. What an L. Danny, yeah, it is what it is. We just got to sit in our shit. Danny Jansen, though, looking at this, solid C+. He's a great catcher. Guy you love to have on the team. Given the fact that he got an A last year and then you compare the numbers, C+. C+ is good.
Yeah.
Another season
injuries.
Screwed up by injuries.
Yeah, 300 plate appearances, half a season, 86 games, half a season, 17 home runs, terrific. OPS of 786, terrific. He got back to taking walks again. It's for what he gave the team in his time, healthy, but didn't stay healthy enough. So, yeah, I'll give him a B- just to be different.
Yeah, that's fair. And this is a guy, this guy has grown up with the team. He's been he's a part of the core. I view him as part of the core of this team. And I think the rest of them do. And I think he's probably the best catcher the Jays have had in a long time. And given how absolutely terrible the season was for Alejandro Kirk last year, you cannot afford to let Danny Jansen walk away. You can't.
Yeah. Speaking of Alejandro Kirk, terrific year defensively again. 14. He was 99th in blocks above average, which is 99th percentile. Very good. Good framer.
I hate not that so you're starting off like this.
Not great arm. I'm doing the shit sandwich, Patrick.
Oh, fuck.
But you look at his rest of his batting numbers, absolute shit. Still really good, though, at not striking out, and he still takes his walks. The problem was for Kirky that he just had not a good year.
it says?
Pre-All-Star break, 620 OPS. Post-All-Star break, 775. So he did pick it up in the second half of the year when the team needed him to, when Danny Jansen was hurt, which was good. He was actually better at home than on the road, Patrick, by like 200 OPS points. So he was the exception here to my theory rule.
Of course he was.
Yeah, it just such a weird season. I mean, you flip between 2022 and 2023 on his Savant page. Reminds you a bit of George Springer, where 2022 is red and 2023 looks like you just shitted a bunch of blueberries. And yeah, that's the story for him. It's just, it was an inconsistent year, a terrible start. And I'm happy that he kept his defensive value, because his offensive value until the last 3 months of the year was absolute zero.
I see come up here. I'm looking at Kirk's game logs, and it says that he hit 281 in April, 236 in May, 245 in June, 278 in July, 246 in August,
the problem,
231 in September.
The problem was is that he had no power in those months. His slugging percentage in May was 278. It was below his on-base percentage. It was a 564 OPS month, you know? Yeah, he got off to a really good start. Really good start in April. Yeah, 836 OPS that month. But then he was below that until July when he hit 813. Those were his only two months over 800 OPS. The rest were anywhere between 713 and that 564. So inconsistent year, up and down, all over the place. Finished strong. Just like Kevin Biggio gives me hope that the finish will translate moving forward. Unlike Matt Chapman, who finished shittily for like two straight months of just below 200 average. At least shittily. Kirk, yeah, I don't know if that's a word, but I'm making
it. I love
it. Kirk is on the upward trend, just like Biggio finished the season. And it still leaves me hope. This guy still has a lot of control left. Which I mean means nothing if he's not going to be useful, but I mean he's not a free agent until he has three more years of control left. So he has 24, 25 and 26 under team control for arbitration. Going to be an affordable catching option for a few years to come yet. He's not going anywhere at this point. There's nobody now that Mourinho was traded to Arizona last winter. There's nobody pushing him and Jano in the catcher ranks yet internally. And there's no big catching free agents that the Jays are going to bring in to push either of those two guys. If unless something really changes, the Jays are going to go in with their two catchers that they started this season with again. Kirk, for me, it's a D. And that's my grade.
Well, I don't want to... I'm trying to be different. Like, I'm trying to think about, like, how to word phrases differently. But Kirk came into camp late. I'm not mad at him for having a life outside of baseball. Okay? I'm not criticizing him because he came to camp late because he had a baby coming. Okay? Let's not get confused, okay? I feel like the man still came into camp unprepared. I don't know how to say it any other way. Are you with me?
I'm with you.
Okay. D.
Yep, fair. Okay.
I just looking at how this season went, the average wasn't there. The OBP wasn't really there. The slug, non-existent. There were times where it looked like he was swinging a plastic shopping bag.
The Russell Martin approach. Yeah.
I'm upset.
Let's talk about Santiago Espinal.
I don't even want to do that.
Santiago Espinal, Patrick, it's 254 plate appearances, doesn't qualify for a lot of metrics. He was also a little bit better at home than on the road, but it was a 659 at home OPS. Not good anyway. So I'm not worried about guys who don't hit for shit anyways. Espinal, he peaked in 2021 in terms of his like potential. The Jays gave him a lot of playing time in 2022. It didn't translate into a lot of success offensively anyway. Still a great defender. Wasn't as good of a defender this year. Didn't get to play as much. I'm a little bit surprised that he hasn't been traded yet. I'm anticipating that he's not a Blue Jay opening day. The good thing is he still has the 3 more years of arbitration left as well, so he's still a controllable asset. The problem is that outside of his defense, he doesn't provide any value. He was a 0.1 F4 this year compared to 2.3 in 2022. D for me, and that's all I'm going to say about it.
It's Santiago-ver for Espinal. This was the worst. I know, that was the worst. That was the worst.
No, I love it. That was great. That was terrific.
There is nothing to glean from this that you like. It just fails the eyeball test. He's not hitting for contact anymore. He's not really getting on base for walks. He's not hitting for power and never did. But, I mean, he's not stealing bases. If you had to choose between Santiago Espinal or Orelvis Martinez as your bench middle infielder, who would you pick?
Oh, fuck. Not Espinal. That's my answer. Yeah. Not Espinal.
Yeah. 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 You see where I'm getting at.
Yep.
So, D minus.
Okay.
You Brandon know how high I was on Santiago Espinal?
Yeah, you were championing the fan.
And even last year I was bargaining.
Yeah, you were in that stage. Now you've come to acceptance.
And now I'm at the point where I would rather Orelvis Martinez, who only just got himself out of a miserable funk at the plate. Because at least Orelvis has power. I think Orelvis could hit better than 248, have a higher than 310 OBP, and have a slug at least 100 points higher than Santiago Espinal. And he's only played like 30 AAA games or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
No, you know what? I'm changing my grade. This is an F. We're not... No, this is an F. This is a failure of a season for him. And it's really unfortunate.
Brandon Belt.
It's an F.
Brandon Belt.
It's an F. Brandon Belt. Okay.
One-year deal.
Go ahead.
One-year deal, $9 million for Brandon Belt. About the same as Keir Myers.
For what you got out of him?
For what you got out of him. I think it was pretty good. I mean, I think he had the highest OPS on the team at 859.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it was only 400 plate appearances. Did get injured. Still hit 19 home runs, though, Patrick. I'm looking at home road splits. Only 22 points lower at home. He was just good everywhere. He was 848 at home, 870 on the road. Not a big difference. Brandon Belt didn't care where he hit. He was just hitting baseballs. Did play some defense, of course, with the Jays as well, too, which was good. He played some first base when Vladdy needed a day to DH. Still had that ability to play out there, which was fine. We love that. I think for what the Jays got out of Brandon Belt, terrific. Absolutely terrific. And it's a shame that they couldn't give him another deep playoff run, because obviously he's been a guy who's got a ton of World Series experience. He played 28 starts at first base, 29 games total. So still was able to contribute when Vladdy needed a day to DH, which was more than enough, which was great. I love Brandon Belt. He was worth 2.3 F4 this year. Huge bounce back year for him after a 0.1 the year before. He proved to everybody who doubted him that even after the knee surgery, he's still a good baseball player. I hope that we haven't seen the last of Brandon Belt in the majors. I think he still has a lot to offer. But if he decides to retire, I wish him the best. And he went out on his own terms, essentially, after this season. So pretty good when you put up a 2.3 F4 in 103 games. He was on pace to be a 3-plus F4 player over a full season of games. So love Brandon Belt. For me, it's an A for Brandon Belt, just based on what the Jays got for the money they paid. And, yeah, A for me. That's all I got
to
say.
For what they paid, it's an A-plus. Here's the thing, though. What an incredible swan song for Brandon Belt after being absolutely ravaged by injuries to come back and have a season like this to prove that he could still bop. It looks, though, like the career's probably... done.
It might be done. I mean, good for him. He had a terrific career. He's won World Series championships like twice, 2012 and 2014. Terrific player. Had a great career. If it is indeed over. Not too much to add on Brandon Belt. There's not much to criticize.
I'm giving him an A+ because sure. For his role.
Yeah.
He
did what he needed to do.
He's serviceable, yep, as a first baseman, the same way that Edwin was. But like, if you showed me this stat line and was like, this was Edwin's last year, I'd be like, yeah. Yeah, give me more of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Who
although I think Edwin aged better than
who that can complain was. About a 35-year-old having an .859 OPS and 19 home runs and 400 plate appearances?
Nobody. He'd have to be bonkers.
That's a 30 home run pace over 600 plate appearances.
Brandon Belt's the only infielder I'm giving an A+ to. And conversely, I only gave out one F.
Yep. Perfect. That's
great way
that.
To cap it off. It is the episode of Santiago-ver.
It's Jover.
It's Jover.
I love that phrase. I don't
overall, yeah, if we were to like look at all the grading, do you think we were looking back on all of the players that we've graded here in the off season? Do you think we were too harsh on anybody?
No, I think we were harsh enough on the coaching staff. we were generous to the players based on the fact that there's something going on in that locker room. There's something going on at the baseballs at Rogers Center. Obviously, looking at the metrics. I think we were pretty objective on how we graded our players. I don't think we let like one or two things influence us. I could have given Vladdy an F for his base running in the postseason, but I didn't. I think we could have been more harsh. I think we were more than fair. I think we were more critical than we have been in the past, but that might be a good thing. We weren't just glazing people up, you know? So I think we did a good job.
What does that mean? Glazing? What does that mean?
Make it like sucking them off, worshiping them, making sure make everything they touch is gold. You know, we weren't homers in our grades at all. We were fair.
It's time to put this season in, like in the books.
Yeah, that's enough 2023 Blue Jays talk. Now
it's over. It's I can over. Tell you right now, you guys will be excited for this. As we speak right now, I'm opening up a package that I got recently.
Ooh.
For a brand spanking new Toronto Blue Jays baseball cap with the little like embroidery for the 2020 postseason. I'm really happy I got this. The Jays played 18 forgettable innings in the postseason, but as usual, when 59 Fitty hats go on sale, your boy is right there.
You're there like a dirty shirt.
Yeah, I'm there. I had to to grab one for myself. So I'm now bending the beak and putting the hat on, brand new.
Nice.
The hat's on.
New hats always feel good.
I'll remember fondly the 2023 postseason, and I'll remember fondly the 2020 season. I'm giving this team an overall grade of a C-. And, yeah.
Yep, that's fair. Well, this episode will come to you eventually. Whenever you listen to it, I hope that the Blue Jays have already signed big-name free agents, and you're getting this episode long in the rearview of that. Luckily, none of the players we talked about today, nothing was time-dependent. It was looking back at their past numbers, so... that's that. But if you like what we do, give us a follow anywhere on social media at BFMD Podcast. You can find us online at bfmdpodcast.com. Thanks to Patrick for going through these grades. It is tedious work to look at numbers over and over again and try to come up with rationalizing giving guys grades, or you know, even just coming up with a kind of a benchmark for how you decide what's a C and what's higher than a C, you know? And I think we did a good job.
It's hard to analyze. I honestly, like, we can look at the Savant stuff all the live long day, and I find it hard to analyze things because when I think about, like, the best moments of the year, it's always positive stuff. Or, well, obviously, because I'm saying the word best. Yeah. But what I mean is, like, when I think of Brandon Belt, I think of the best parts of the year, not the parts where, like,
yeah,
He either struck out or popped out or grounded out with the bases loaded or with two on. You know what I mean? Like, you remember all the good stuff?
You do.
It's hard to do this analysis in a vacuum. Yeah. And I had a really hard time with grading Matt Chapman and Danny Jansen in particular, because on one hand, it's one player I really dislike that I have to acknowledge the positives to. And then on the other hand, it's a player I absolutely adore and love, and I have to be able to talk about the negative stuff. And it's hard to get there. I find it hard to get there.
See, I'm a monster, and I can just look at the numbers and pretend there's not a human being behind it.
I can't do that though.
I'm an absolute demon that way. So
do you think that looking into 2024 now, because that's where we're at, do you think that with so many of these outgoing players who had positive seasons, the Jays may be in trouble?
No. No, I think everybody who's leaving, Merrifield, Kiermaier, Chapman, I don't think those losses are irreplaceable. The fact that this team is keeping their rotation together, largely keeping the bullpen together, if not fully, except for Jordan Hicks. There's only room to upgrade in the bullpen. There's room to upgrade everywhere else too. But I think the fact that the people who had success are still here. Like Vladdy and Bo still had like good seasons. They're above major league average. Vladdy barely. It was like a 1.0 WAR, which is pretty much average this year. But I mean, the expected numbers are still good. I think I'm still optimistic. I think the fact that at this moment in time, Rogers is pursuing Ohtani, they're potentially pursuing trading for Soto. Like they're trying to make the team better. It doesn't seem like there's a desire to keep the status quo. There's desire to shake things up with a big move and a big name. And I think I still feel positive about the future. I'm an ever optimist. I'm a Leafs fan. I'm a Riders fan. I'm a Blue Jays fan. There's always next year. I'm a Ferrari fan. There's always next year for Ferrari. Next year's our year, by the way.
It's not, though.
It always is until it's not. It is until spring testing. And then it's not. And then next year's our year again. See, there's always next year. And I'll forever feel that way. And I do think that the Jays have what it takes to be better than they were. So, yeah, I have hope.
Let's end with that.
Okay. Well, for Patrick out in Halifax, I am Justin here in Saskatoon. We'll be with you over the winter with more content, as we are now like less than, it's like 6 weeks until pitchers and catchers report. So buckle up.